at the end of your life? What will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leadership. Today, I have a great guest that is joining me from Madison area. I had a chance to hear her firsthand speak and also interact in person. And now I wanted to give you opportunity to interact with her. She's not only known as a great digital strategist, also a sales leader and change agent, but she's also the founder of Ralph Consulting. Without further ado, let me introduce to this amazing catalyst that is creating phenomenal communities around the world, Emma Rollo. How are you, Emma?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to see you again.
Wonderful to see you too. And it's just so great to see a woman that is making tremendous strides in things that we see also tremendous need. Before we go into that conversation, Emma, do you mind sharing how did you even get into to do what you currently are doing? How did you find the path forward for yourself?
Yeah, so I have a little bit of a windy road in terms of like my career path. So I actually went to school to be a social studies teacher. And I went through the student teaching and actually tried out a number of different schools while I was student teaching. They're at-risk students, private schools, standard public schools, and I couldn't ever quite find the right fit for me in the classroom. And at the same time that I was doing all of that student teaching, I had the opportunity to have an internship doing corporate training. And so I got a little taste of the business world and kind of saw that I could still use the same skills that I loved from teaching. But rather than teaching little people, I could teach big people. And so that was kind of my transition into business. And I took a position in a corporate training role right after college. But that role also kind of segued me a little bit into the world of sales. At the time, I was working for a restaurant franchise. And my role was to help people that were thinking about opening one of these restaurants to learn all the aspects of running the business, but also whether they wanted to do it or not. So there was a little hint of sales there at that time. And so when I was ready to make a transition, I really wanted to move into the world of technology. I could tell it was going to make a big difference. And so that was when my husband and now co-founder of the business that we run made the suggestion that I should fully pivot my career into sales. And he did it through the line of the best salespeople are teachers. And if you find a product and a company you believe in, it's not going to feel like selling because you're going to be able to help people solve problems by teaching them about whatever it is you're selling. And so with that mindset in mind, I kind of like traversed into the world of tech sales. And then realized by happenstance that I was actually really interested in it all and spent about 10 years of my career there across various different industries and then ended up kind of settling into the insurance world with my most recent sales position. And through that journey, I started creating content online, started doing more speaking and connecting with people from all around the world and really broadening my view of what transformation looks like and what really drives the change, which, you know, we've connected over the people side of change quite a bit. And so then when I decided to leave my sales role, I joined my husband and a lot of the consulting that we do is focused on that idea that he used to initially convince me to move into sales and this idea that education has massive power in the world and the best salespeople are teachers and the best leaders use education as their mechanism for helping people traverse the world, and especially in the digital world, we need leaders that are figuring out how to tap into educational content to really drive change.
I love that. So you connect in all the key levers, right? It's like, it's more important from psychology, also from what makes people think, but also what, where the pain point is to really make that change. And sometimes we wait for that pain point, but sometimes we also do proactively. But ultimately, how do we move the needle in that right direction? And you have quite a bit of digital footprint also. You've been doing some interesting stuff on the platform that everybody's terrified is going to go away. And I'm curious, you also have quite a bit of following on TikTok. And do you mind sharing, how did you also diversify, obviously now teaching, learning in on that platform? And what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, so I actually, you know, when TikTok first made its way onto the scene, I didn't really get it. I was in that camp of people that was like, why would you want to watch people like dance all the time? And I was not an early adopter, I would say. But I was at the time, you know, early on in COVID, creating video content on LinkedIn. And I just assumed because I was talking about business focused content that the spot that it belonged was on LinkedIn and LinkedIn alone. But I did then, as a standard millennial, have an Instagram account, and then Instagram Reels came out and I started to see these videos coming out, and there were some trending audios that I can't say anything other than wiggled their way into my head. And I had an idea of how it would relate to digital transformation and change management. And my brain would not stop thinking about it until I did something about it. And so I tried initially to create an Instagram reel using the sound and then export it so I could post it to my LinkedIn. And at the time, reels could not be exported without a watermark. And there was no tool that I could use to take the watermark off of it. And that's changed now, but it was such a new enhancement to Instagram that the functionality wasn't there. And so I begrudgingly downloaded TikTok to make this one video. I was convinced it wasn't going to resonate with anybody, and it was just going to be this like weird experiment. And I posted the video and I left to go to an event that I had to go to all day long. And I came home from the event and I logged onto my phone and it had over 20,000 impressions on LinkedIn. And I was like, oh, okay. So this kind of content resonated with people. Maybe I should like try it again and see what happens. So I slowly started to create content on TikTok for the purpose of putting it onto LinkedIn. And I started what I called like TikTok Fridays. So it was like, I still created all of my like standard businessy content during the week. And then I would go rogue on Fridays. And, then over time, I started to recognize that there was an audience for that content on TikTok. And I started to recognize that I would get different responses and different feedback from the audience on TikTok because it wasn't something that was tied to their career and tied to their company. People would speak more freely. And so then I started leaning in more there, and that kind of changed my structure of content and the way that I speak to my followers. And now I've ended up building a really cool community there that crosses over some to LinkedIn and back and forth, but there's also different pockets. And I think that that's a, you know, for me as somebody that wants that feedback from other people and understanding their experiences, it's been really valuable for me to get this other perspective from TikTok and how it infuses into my speaking or the way that I'm speaking to leaders on the consulting side and kind of all of the ways that it flows into my life.
I love that story. And I'm so glad you shared that, because it just shows that you are a living example of what that change and transformation occurs, first of all, within yourself, and then also with trial and error and experimentation. But putting yourself out there, obviously, as a result, reaped such a phenomenal results. Mm-hmm. And for everybody watching and listening, that's really where things start. You don't wait because those results will not show up on your doorstep. Nobody can really, quote unquote, buy them. You have to really do them, and you have to really put yourself out there and tweak it a long way. But I'm curious also, I know that they're talking about, as a lot of people said, oh, Isabella, certain platforms are going to go away. I don't think it's too late to start it now. What should we do? Do you mind also sharing your perspective of that reason why, again, because we find always reasons not to do certain things, right? And that also hinders the growth, transformation, and that digital footprint.
Well, I think even if it does go away, the skills that you build from creating content on a platform don't go away. So if TikTok was to disappear tomorrow, I would still take all of the things that I've learned about engaging with a community and growing a community and creating content. Like, I'm far better at editing videos now than I was before that time frame. And things that I do on that platform could translate, you know, onto other tools. The other side of it is, I don't know if it will go away, because like part of it is a sale. And it's an incredibly lucrative platform at this point, based off of the amount of daily users that are on the platform. And there's already been a number of people that would have the financial means to put together some sort of purchase that have come forward, like Kevin O'Leary, who, you know, is kind of famous from his Shark Tank appearances, but he's a very powerful business mogul, has said, I would broker a deal. I'd figure out how to get it done, because it's done too much for my business and my personal brand to let it disappear. So I think that there's, you know, you can always, to your point, you can wait and you can let the world play out in front of you and use that as an excuse to keep you from trying things. Or you can move forward with, I'm going to learn what I can right now. And if the circumstances change in the future, then I pivot the same way that I would choose to pivot with anything else that life hands me. And so that's kind of the philosophy that I've taken there. And I, you know, it was apparently going to go away a year ago or 2 years ago, and it hasn't happened yet. So I've gotten massive benefit in that time frame. So I'm going to keep going with it as long as they let me.
I love that attitude. And again, great, great validation that no matter what, we have a alternative, or will be some other alternatives. But I also love what you said, because this is common, what we find also with the companies when they develop their talent. It's like, you know, we invested in them, but what if they leave? But what if they chose to stay and they're not as effective and not capable and not really on top of the game and understanding how things shift, which obviously I'm sure that was one of the key stepping blocks for you to be successful in sales, and specifically in a very competitive industry such as insurance. So do you mind shed some light for everybody, because that industry changed. It's been tremendously regulated in recent 4 or 5 years just alone. How did you navigate that and were so successful at it?
So to your point, there's, well, like the world of software is constantly changing, and insurance has had a lot of intense pressure. I will say, being in software sales in an insurance, or in an industry like insurance that is like facing these massive pressures, it does provide opportunity to help give solutions to people that are up against these big challenges. So, I mean, I definitely had the advantage of being somebody that could come forward with solutions to help make businesses more efficient or solve problems that they'd been grappling with for a long time from that standpoint. But in terms of, you know, going into an industry like insurance that has so many different facets to it, I don't even want to pretend that I know. I probably know 10% of the 100% piece of that entire industry, because it is so complex. There's so many layers to it. But both in learning that industry and staying up to date with technology, just taking ownership of my like continuous learning journey has been my secret power from the very beginning. When I started in technology, I was actually just having a conversation with someone about this today. They were new to the insurance industry and asking me like how they could start creating content if they're not an expert. And I said, well, when I entered into the technology side of things, I didn't know what any of the acronyms meant. I didn't know, even again, like I probably knew 0.5% of everything there was to know about technology. But as I learned things, I helped teach other people those things. And when you teach other people what you're learning, it strengthens and reinforces what you're learning. But also they present different questions to you that you get to go out and learn more about. And it always brings me back to like when I was teaching, a 12-year-old is going to come up with new and novel questions, even if you've been teaching the same subject for a very long time. And I learned really quickly that the best way to approach a question that you didn't know the answer to was to say like, I don't know the answer to that, but let's go figure it out together. And so that was always my mentality when I was in software sales and new to that space, or when I first like got into insurance and was trying to figure out this whole landscape. It was a lot of like, I don't know the answer, but I'll get back to you. Or like, ooh, you know what? What you just said kind of went over my head. Can we like take two steps back and talk through that concept? But that idea of continuous learning has been incredibly valuable to me in my career, and having, I think, the humble pie served to you by middle schoolers when you're navigating the world and realizing that you're better off being honest when you don't understand something and taking the time to go fill that gap for yourself and then paying it forward to help other people fill those gaps has been really, really beneficial for me. And then, you know, again, kind of in this bucket of insurance and software, all of the people that are looking to you to solve their problems in whatever industry typically aren't then the experts on the software side. So while I might not have understood all of the dynamics of what they had going on in their day-to-day life, I could repay the favor by teaching them about technology and things to look out for while they were making decisions or planning their large transformations. So it kind of all goes back to like those days as a teacher and kind of a continuous student of life, I guess.
I love that attitude and lifelong learnings. It's in our blood and passion, and as well, passion to educate and train people, which is great. It's as you mentioned also, younger generations. It's like, but it's so different also teaching adults, right? It's like from when you're teaching curious, open-minded kid. But then when you come to these adults that are set in their mindset, or they think that's, they know it all, or they don't need to anymore put themselves out, or they have a status or title or position that they feel like that's really what all they need to do. We've seen a rude awakening, don't we, in the recent years?
Oh, yeah. And I think that that's, you know, when we initially were talking, we talked about the idea of like trust and leadership and how that flows into so much that we're seeing in the business world right now. An arrogance or a sense that you shouldn't be a continuous learner, I think, is a big part of the reason that there is this like trust gap, because somebody that's coming in with a different perspective on the world, different skill sets, especially like when we look at generational components, if you're only talking the talk, and you haven't like delivered to what that means for execution and shown that you've spent the time to build the muscle, especially in the world of technology, younger people or your employees that have spent the time building that muscle will see it like that. And they'll recognize that you're making decisions from a point of arrogance as opposed, or maybe even fear, as opposed to a point of knowledge and holistic understanding of what's going to be best for helping your team or company accomplish goals. And I think that that definitely flows into the culture and the relationship dynamics that are present within a company.
You're spot on, and also inclusivity that goes with that, right? It's like, so that it's not just one voice and it's not echo chamber, but also opportunity to hear from diverse, different skill sets and diverse talent and their thinking, because that's where the juice of creativity start happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, and even the same idea being revisited at a different time under different circumstances can be really powerful for driving change. And like when I first started my career, one of the most frustrating things for me to hear when you came forward with an idea was like, oh, we tried that 5 years ago. And it's like, but like 5 years ago is different than what today looks like. And so the leaders that I always trusted the most and wanted to work with were the ones that were like, hey, you know, we've tried that in the past. Help me understand, like, this is how it went wrong. Do you see it playing out the same way or differently if we try it again this time? Or, you know, that's an interesting idea. We've done that before, but what if X, Y, and Z? And those people that are open-minded were the ones that I was encouraged and inspired to work for, as opposed to the ones that shut down their ideas because they felt like their wisdom knew no bounds.
And sadly, we see a lot of that in the latter, where that's why we're having so many symptomatic issues that we're seeing. But what I love about that, you were able also to build not only the trust and obviously spirit and influence within your clients, but also to build communities and being a catalyst in community of that movement, of that digital strategy ready for transformation and change. So I'm curious for everybody watching and listening, how that really can happen. Specifically even creating sub-communities within an organization or outside of organizations. Because right now, common theme that I hear is we wish we have better environments that we can turn into or ask for advice or engage or someone could truly get us. We're feeling still on the island. We're feeling very isolated and lonely. And the journey itself of the life can be very long and little when we add all these extra elements. So I'm curious, how do you see that and how you tackle that so that others can hear what's truly possible?
I think, and I always hesitate to use this word because I feel like it's become a bit of a buzzword, but I think it all comes down to authenticity. And when you're seeking community and you're seeking to remove that feeling of loneliness, you have to show up as who you actually are to get the feeling that people are seeing you for who you are. And I know that that can be incredibly intimidating. And, you know, kind of going back again to like my career journey, it took me probably 5 years as a software sales rep focused in male dominated industries to realize that like, the way that things were being done by people that I admired and saw being successful were just never going to work for me because I was playing a character as opposed to being who I am. And that journey for me came through content and recognizing that there was this natural community that started to surround me when I showed up as myself. And so, you know, when I started my initial interview series, I would say I got a sense of that. But it was when I actually did fully lean into like the TikTokification of my content that I think I got brave enough to fully show up as myself, because I am somebody who, like, when I look back at when I was in the office, I am somebody that liked to like pull pranks on my coworkers. And I am the person that like unnecessarily over celebrates birthdays and like loved to do things like fill someone's office with balloons. There's all of these parts of my personality that when we went remote and these benefits of like in-person interaction went away, I was missing that. And I felt very disconnected because every interaction I had was on interaction. Everything was a scheduled meeting. It was professional. It was exactly like the character that I wanted to play. And I spent probably realistically like 9 or 10 hours a day during COVID playing this character before I fully got to relax and like go into it. And then I didn't get the same sense of community that I had with my friends and everything else. And when I started to lean into showing up with, you know, outfit changes and talking to myself in videos or taking rap lyrics and making them into something that connects to change management and digital transformation, I got to show these parts of my personality that I felt like I had to hide before. And then when I did that and I put that out there, it started to resonate with people differently than my content before had. And then this community naturally developed from that standpoint. And the more that I show up that way, the more that that community grows. And so when it comes to things like maybe building a community within your company, I know like I have one client who was sharing with us that her team, there's a number of people that found out through like just chatting that they all did martial arts. And so they started a Teams chat that was like Martial Arts Monday, where they would all like share pictures and stuff from like the weekend when they were out doing that. And then like that became something that was fun and other people wanted to be involved in it. So instead of it just being martial arts, it turned into Movement Mondays. So like their team as a whole came together to start showing this other part of their personality that typically was reserved for outside of office time. And it was within a specific channel, it was opt-in, and they were able to build this like little community for themselves within the company about something that didn't feel like it had to do with the company. And so again, it's like these little nuggets of connection that you can find by showing up is exactly who you are, or what's going to help you kind of combat that loneliness and find those pockets of other people that, you know, want to talk about the things that you do. And again, like I showed up on TikTok to talk about change management and digital transformation. And it took some time, but my people found me on my corner of the internet. And it was because I just kept showing up as who I am. And I think that that's the biggest secret to being able to find that community is you have to have that authenticity.
I love that. And yes, might be buzzword, but it is not obviously explain and demonstrate it as well as you just did, because a lot of people still don't know what that really looks like, right? Mm-hmm. And as we know in leadership, it's so important to be also consistent. So that authenticity, it's all about the consistent, most natural self, so that when we see each other online, shouldn't be surprised when we see each other offline, that we don't have now a completely different disconnect or persona that you have on TikTok versus on LinkedIn versus right now in this interview, and that that is consistently the same person. And we see so much mistakes being made just around that people don't get it. It's like, no, you don't want it to have this jolting surprise, because that's obviously tell us that which version of you is not real. And No, then it doesn't build a trust, and then doesn't build also great communities and everything related to that. So I'm curious now, with everything you've been doing, obviously you're doing so many, it seems like everything right.
Don't worry. I went to the gym today in clogs instead of tennis shoes. So I don't do everything right.
Wow. World of busy mom and entrepreneur. That's cute. What I'm curious is like, what are you seeing where things are lacking now the most, not only from leadership perspective, but truly organizational perspective, so that they're really kind of creating only their own hindering blocks, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest, and it relates to people and a change management focus, but it kind of goes to like a higher level of, I feel like we are so focused on shiny objects, and that takes many different forms, but especially in my world tied to technology, it's glaringly obvious that we're very, very focused on shiny objects. And those shiny objects keep us from focusing on the fundamentals of so much in business and in life. And I think it's like kind of the same propensity of like, you could eat a relatively healthy diet and go for a walk every day and, you know, limit your alcohol and go to bed at a reasonable time, and you're going to end up being a pretty healthy person. But what we do is we get distracted by like the shiny object of doing something like the keto diet that's like pretty restrictive so that we can snap into shape really quickly. And we're going to do these super intense workouts, and we're going to go all in against these shiny objects that people are telling us are going to completely transform our lives. And then we go and it's not what we expected, or we can't stay consistent with it. And we've lost sight of these fundamental things that could be making a difference for our lives. And we end up burning all of our energy and essentially burning ourselves out on these like high intensity, shiny objects. The same is true with something like a transformation. There are some foundational things that many companies should be paying attention to right now that would drive strong value for them, but they're not the shiny, exciting things that are going to revolutionize the world overnight. So instead of paying attention to those foundational things, we go after these shiny objects. And then we lose sight of our people. We lose sight of the big picture of what we're supposed to be accomplishing from like a mission statement within our company. And there's probably plenty of other parallels that we could make that argument in terms of how we get distracted by these shiny objects. But I think, you know, like a philosophy of James and I's in our business is that like sometimes keeping things simple makes a big difference. And sometimes focusing on those fundamental things is what's really going to drive value and deliver results for you. And so, you know, James is specifically, my husband is very much a proponent of like simple living and taking things back and like bringing them back down to the fundamentals and doing the things that are going to drive results. And so by proxy of being married to him, that's something that's been infused into me too. And that simplicity and those like foundational pieces seem to be what's missing for a lot of companies. And when we get burned out and we're focusing on these shiny things, we lose track of what retention looks like. We lose trust because we're not delivering on our promises. And there's so many symptoms of that, like, shiny object chasing that impact the way that we are able to run a business.
That is a fantastic explanation. And I'm glad you touched on, because again, we always think, and I remember seeing and being in so many sales conversations and pre-sales specifically. And when you tell them what solution looks like or should be, or what's the path forward, and they're always look with skepticism because they expect uber expensive, uber grandiose solution, because it's almost like simplicity cannot be, you know, the answer, right? And it's just such an interesting to see from psychology standpoint, which I'm sure you can relate to that. It's like, even with the kids, it's like, oh, you just need to do this. And it's like, no, I need to do something else. And it's just that conviction that is sometimes more to it. And in reality, that simplicity is the driver. And it's also the one that's going to help to sustain it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like fighting your kid that they need to go to bed when they're having a meltdown and they're convinced that like the solution is not for them to go to sleep and that they need to keep doing X, Y, and Z. And you're like, no, like I promise you need to go to bed. Everybody in the world outside of you can see that you need to go get some rest. But it is like, you know, it's so easy for us to lose. And I mean, probably the same thing for adults too, but like, it's so easy for us to lose sight of that simple solution because we're bombarded with messages that tell us that that's not enough, and that there is some sort of magic bullet. And even though AI is amazing and it can do a lot of things and it'll likely unlock possibilities that I can't even conceptualize right now, it's still not a magic bullet. And there's a lot of work for us to do before we get to the point where it can unlock those possibilities. And we get one chance to do it right. So if we do it wrong, we're going to all end up in like a situation that we don't want to be in. So it's to our advantage to pull back, focus on the fundamentals, and build the world that we want to live in using the tools that we have, instead of letting technology and the tools dictate it for us.
I love what you just said that. And we dealt earlier with a shiny object. I feel like it's a gold rush era. I'm hearing And all of a sudden, it's like AI, it's Kailash, who's going to be the first? And the reality, you're totally spot on the risks that are associated with that, but also implications. And then also what's going to do, not only for your team and talent, obviously, but overall for your consumers, right? It's like, mm-hmm. How do we moderate this? How do we regulate? And a lot of times, it's not about who is the first. Definitely in this scenario, it's not about who is the first. And I love what you said, it's who is going to do the right thing and create the world that we all want to live in that is also going to serve us versus other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want a company that's AI first. I've said this a lot recently. I want a company that's people first and uses AI as a tool. And there's something inherently broken with the fact that the amount of executives that are parading around for investors that they're going to be an AI first company, that the flow of money is what's encouraging that. But I wish that there was something I could do to shake them to be like, but you're a person. Don't you want it to be people first?
So it's very interesting because when I was recently sharing, I always ask, and that question was asked by someone else day before, but it was also, it's like, what is the biggest asset of every company? It's like, you've just either small two people like yourself or however, handful, dozen versus hundreds and thousands of them. It's always actually the people aspect, right? Because people is the biggest asset to any organization, because without them, I mean, no matter how great technology might be or great process, we're going to not be able to obviously execute upon, and you can never replace the human interaction, human touch, and human capability to that extent that some of them desire. So this brings us really to that digital transformation component, where things are headed, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you see the path or set up the path for your clients, for yourself, in terms of what is coming and what is next?
I think we are quickly approaching a reckoning where companies recognize that they're not going to see the benefit and the value of AI wedged into weird little point solutions. And right now, the people that are, I mean, and there are, of course, exceptions to this rule, but the majority of companies that I see trying to leverage AI are using these very narrow use cases and trying to figure out where they can use it to essentially be first, like you were saying. But there's a lot of companies that do not have the data structures in place or clean data that's going to allow them to actually take advantage of these tools. And we're like, especially in something like the insurance industry, we're coming up against pretty massive talent gaps with a lot of institutional knowledge pouring out of organizations before we've had the chance to capture it. And I think we're about to hit a point where, and it's already starting to happen with some of these large AI companies, where the amount of data that we have to train these tools to reach the potential that we want to is not present or available. And so I think that this idea of like sound data practices, being able to prepare our organizations to actually level up to the point where we can use AI in a meaningful way, is probably something that a lot of companies are going to have to start grappling with. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a software conference where for a document management and kind of like productivity company, and they were talking about like a solution that's on their roadmap to allow companies to actually start to like make use of unstructured data. Those are going to be the types of things that move the needle. So something like document management isn't sexy. It's not exciting. It's very foundational to a company, but we have so much data locked into these unstructured components in our company that if we want to reach the next level, we're going to have to lock into some of that and make use of it. So I think that there's probably going to be a lot of data cleanup. There's going to be, I mean, we're still seeing a lot of conversions from old outdated systems that hopefully people are doing the right thing and like cleaning up their data while they're moving through those conversions. But I think that there's going to be a lot of time and money spent in that arena. And the other piece that I think is also going to be continue to be a very hot button topic is integration and connectivity, because right now, like I was saying, there's all these different point solutions, and there's still a lot of companies that have these really old, outdated systems at the center of it all. And they've just like wrapped it in spaghetti noodles to like try and modernize things as opposed to going through that painful update. But there's still lack of connectivity. And I do think that there's the opportunity for AI to help us with some of that and make communication flow more efficiently through our organizations. But this idea of integration and connectivity, we still have a long way to go in terms of our systems talking and actually being able to deliver the types of insights that a person in the chair needs to efficiently do their job, and actually have technology deliver on this promise that humans are going to be able to do the human things and technology will do the bits and the bobs of the technical work. We still have humans doing a lot of the manual work as they jump from system to system. And we need to solve that problem before we get to this like realized future of what we've all been striving for.
Brilliant. I love it. You're spot on with all of that. And the best part, that is when we know what foundation looks like or needs to look, what we need to solve first, it's going to really help stack things much easier afterwards. And as a result, fulfill that digital transformation with the right digital strategy. Mm-hmm. And what I'm curious, obviously, you've accomplished so much. You've been doing amazing things. And I'm curious, what's in the bucket list? Where are you headed? And what are you super excited with your journey right now on personal and professional level?
Well, you got to see me in my happy space. When I have a microphone in my hand and I get to do a presentation, it's a culmination of all of my things. I get to be teacher Emma while also pulling from my experience and then pulling from the insights of my community. Because when I'm talking, I'm often going back to the conversations and the interaction that I have with that community. So that is like a really nice sweet spot for me that all of my favorite things get to come together in terms of like my professional identity. And then we also run an online community, my husband and I, helping other people figure out how to make the most of online resources like social media and that kind of thing. And that is another spot where I feel like I get a sweet spot because it's community, it's education, and we're helping teach people things. We get to learn about all different kinds of businesses and interact with people all over the world in that community. But it's also teaching with a very willing audience. So as opposed to forcing middle schoolers to pay attention to social studies, I get the chance to teach people about stuff that they're really passionate about and excited about. So growing both my speaking career and that community are really big things professionally. And then personally, when you're doing things like traveling a lot for speaking and those kinds of things, the balance of life becomes a challenge as well. So making sure that while I have the advantage of owning my own business, that I figure out how to find that balance and what that balance looks like for me, because I think it's different for everybody. But making sure that we have time in our life for our physical and mental well-being and our family and being there for our daughters as they grow up in the way that I hope to be. And so it's definitely, it's going to be a continuous balancing act that will always take time and will probably change over time. But from a personal perspective, making sure that I'm always conscious of what that balance looks like and I'm making the micro changes that I need to along the way to actually live the life that we want.
That's fantastic. And I love, again, such a great example of being such a young and driven and accomplished, but also being a mom, being wife, being a business owner. And then at the same time, all of the other things that you transpire and inspire to continue to grow into and or nurture more are fantastic to show what's truly possible. So everybody watching and listening, no excuses, guys, because you know what happens when we put a limit. We don't achieve anything remotely, like Emma just shared a second ago here. But now I always wanted to ask this, people like yourself, with everything you already accomplished, you already obviously shaped tremendous legacy by living it, by leading it, and already leaving it, you know, not only in your sphere of influence from family to businesses you've been associated in community, and with now next chapter in your life, what would you like that legacy to be? What would you really want to be known and remembered by?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think I would like, kind of going back to that idea of authenticity, I think I would like my legacy to be that you get to be the person that you are in the world that you work, and you get to take that space up and you get to be that person. Because I will say, when I figured that out and figured out what that looked like for me, it unlocked so much for me in terms of the right challenges coming my way, the right opportunities coming my way, and just truthfully feeling so much more comfortable and confident in my own skin. And that confidence was not something that I had my whole life. And I will say, having lived not confident and living confident, it makes a big difference. So if at any point in my career and my life, I can encourage other people to step into that, I think that that's the ultimate reward, in terms of putting myself out there from that capacity.
That's fantastic. And one thing I want to just highlight is, am I so approachable? I love your personality, because you immediately exude that invitation to, you want to lean in, have a conversation, and then also wanted to, like, let's do something, like, because you know fun is about to happen. And that is such a beautiful trait to have, and such a refreshing thing to see in the world where we see what we deal with on the daily basis, right? That resistance and pushbacks and all the stuff. And then on flip side, there's amazing rewards, and definitely helps when you have that right mindset, aptitude, and attitude for it. So,
well, thank you for saying that. I truly appreciate that. And I felt the same way when we met. So
thank you.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.